search engine optimization, etc.
Hi, Sean. Welcome to Webstock 08.
Hey, Roger. It's great to be here.
And how's the conference been, do you think?
Oh, it's been really good. I got to be involved with the workshop starting Monday morning, and so all the way through this week. It's just a great bunch of people organizing it, and really neat opinions and thoughts brought in together. It's fun.
So how did you get started in the area of accessibility, Sean?
Well, I was actually in user interface design, so designing mostly software, and got into web when I started having some problems myself. So I had visual problems and wasn't even able to sit up at the computer long enough to work. And so I thought I was going to have to give up and not work anymore. And I discovered accessibility, and I happen to live in a place where there's a Trace Research and Development Center that studies accessibility and has been for some time. So I decided to do something about it. And even after I went into remission and was doing better, once I learned the importance of accessibility and how much it can change people's lives, that was it. I'm sticking with it.
And then on to the W3C.
Yeah. So I got into accessibility more than 10 years ago. And I was integrating it with usability and doing some consulting on that. And then I was really looking at how I could have a more global impact on accessibility. And the W3C was a place for me to do that. So I've been there for 5 years.
Why do you think it is that still there are people who view accessibility in a negative light? Why is that?
There's so many misunderstandings. There was, early on, in fact, you could not make your site accessible and visually appealing and dynamic. So years ago, there was some truth to that myth. For many years now, that's what it is, it's a myth. You can still have a site that is beautiful, that is cutting edge, that is dynamic, and make it accessible. But one of the problems is there aren't enough good examples of that.
In your presentation today, Make Your Website Shine, Polished with Accessibility, you actually talked about misconceptions of it. Is that the sort of myths?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the huge ones, is that accessibility is dull and boring. That's one of the myths and misconceptions that we need to get past, and I think we're doing better. There are more examples, but I really want to challenge designers to provide us with more accessible, with more examples of sites that are beautiful and accessible, and that'll be, you know, really help the field move forward.
Since the introduction of WCAG 1 in 1999, do you think there's been a general improvement in the accessibility of websites?
I think there has been an improvement in sites since 1999. I think part of it was because these guidelines were available internationally. I think part of it is because of some of the government regulations around the world that had been put in place. So certainly the web is a lot more accessible now than it was then, but there's still a lot to be done. While there are sites that are working on some really neat aspects of accessibility, and there are sites that have included accessibility in the redesigns, there are still so many sites on the web that aren't doing even the basics, even the simple things, as you know. And that's sad to me, you know, that even the simple things aren't being done. So it's better, but we've got a lot to go.
And one of the really interesting things I noticed off the audience today as a reaction to your talk was when you started talking about it's not just about people with disabilities, that for everybody, good site, accessible sites brings benefits.
Absolutely, yeah. And when I was selling accessibility several years ago, when most people didn't know about it, we would talk a lot about the additional benefits. You know, the business benefits, the technical benefits. Right now we can talk about the overlap with making your site work better for different mobile devices and search engine optimization. And there were a few people who said, well, that's watering down, that's limiting the importance of access to people with disabilities. And I think it's great to talk about them together, because absolutely accessibility should be done because it's vital and it's important and it's the right thing to do. But when we can understand all the additional benefits to everybody, then we can just put it on a higher plane. We can can get more time and budget to consider accessibility when we realize it really helps everybody.
So Sean, what are the major differences, do you think, between WCAG 1 and WCAG 2?
There's a couple of different things. I mean, one is that WCAG 1 was developed in a world where we were focused a lot on HTML. WCAG 2 has been developed to apply more broadly to different technologies now and to be able to apply to different technologies in the future. So with WCAG 2, we have the basic guidelines themselves, which are intended to become a W3C recommendation standard. And then we have the supporting documents, like the techniques documents, which tell you how to implement WCAG in different technologies and different situations. So WCAG 2 itself is really, it's designed to be more applicable to different technologies now and in the future. Some of the other things that are different are the testability. One of the issues with WCAG 1 is that it wasn't clear sometimes for certain provisions whether a website met WCAG 1 or not. So with WCAG 2, that's been a key factor. So we really want to make it clear. We have success criteria now to make it clear when you have a website that meets accessibility guidelines. What that guideline is, what that success criteria is, and how you can meet that. So that's much more clear.
With WCAG 2, we introduced the concept of accessibility supported. What does this mean? It's a little unclear to some people.
Well, accessibility supported is one of the ways that we allow the guidelines to be to apply now and in the future, to apply in specific situations. Basically what it says is, in order to meet WCAG, in order to provide accessible content, you need to use technologies that are accessibility supported. You need to use technologies that work with assistive technologies and work with the accessibility features of browsers and other user agents. So that's the concept. Now some of the benefits of that, you could have web content use different technologies in certain situations. So for example, if I'm developing an internet application that everyone needs to access, I can't rely on SVG because not everybody has SVG player, right? However, if I'm developing an internal application just for within my company, and I know everybody has access to SVG player and they have the tools so that it's accessible, then I would be able to use SVG in my content.
But as we mentioned already, in terms of WCAG 1, these guidelines did become sort of enshrined in legislation or recommendations from different governments. Do you see any sort of jurisdictional problems with one country having setting one level of accessibility supported with another on the internet?
I think it's certainly something that we're going to need to look at and see how it plays out. You know, because we allow this flexibility, we're going to need to work on how we can define that and how that can benefit accessibility, it can benefit developers, and be a positive thing and not a negative thing. So I think that's something that we're going to have to work on, we're going to have to watch.
Just changing a little bit, with social networking sites like YouTube and MySpace, where do you think the responsibility for accessibility lies in these sites?
I think it's very broad. As I mentioned in the talk, you know, accessibility is partly the role of the content developer. It's partly the role of the browser, media player, and user agents, and the assistive technologies, but also the authoring tools. And so there are things that these tools can do, that the sites can do to help encourage accessibility, as well as just allow it. I mean, some of the sites don't have any provisions for adding accessible content. So even if I'm adding content and I understand accessibility and I want to make something accessible, I can't. So, you know, the first step is just allowing that, the tool allowing that, and the next is going further and actually encouraging it. So when the user puts content on, asking them for whatever is necessary for accessibility.
So there's sort of shared responsibility, the person generating the content and the site or the tool that makes it possible.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely shared responsibility. The first step is the tool has to make it possible and to encourage it. And then we can work on, you know, educating the people who are putting the content on.
So what lies ahead, Sean? Do you think there'll be WCAG 3?
We have talks about this. Yeah, we've been talking about what lies ahead next. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what we need to do now that there's such a convergence between content and user agents and authoring tools. You know, we were just talking about using authoring with really web content and mixed together. So I'm not sure if there'll be WCAG 3. I think there'll be guidelines 3, but maybe they'll be all combined. We'll see.
Many thanks for your time, Sean, and thanks for a great presentation at WebStock 08.
Thanks so much, Roger. Appreciate the time to talk with you.
Thank you.